Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
You know, a lot of people have asked me about the response to Hurricane Harvey regarding the pets, and I want to talk about that. We'll also hear about how stressed, if you have a cat, your cat might be, and how that relates to feline herpes. What? Yes, that is exactly what we'll talk about with Dr. Michael Lappin. But first, here's a friend, Dr. Aubrey Fine, who I've known for many years. He is one of the greatest guys. He really is. He is a walking definition of empathy. He's written so many books. I can't rattle them all off because then we'd be out of time. They include Our Faithful Companions and The Handbook of Animal Assisted Therapy. He's on the board of directors of Pet Partners. In fact, he is the reason I'm involved with this great organization called Pet Partners. At the convention of the American Veterinary Medical Association, I spoke with Dr. Fine about this. Comfort dogs, service dogs, assistance dogs. Oh my gosh, all these terms. What do they all mean?
Thanks for asking the question, because I think what's interesting is the recognition that today, more than ever, people are greatly appreciating the therapeutic value of animals in our lives. That being said, what we're seeing today is somewhat of a misuse of terminology by folks. So when we're looking at what I would call working therapeutic animals and then the laws that cover them, number one, they're service animals. And service animals, you think of guide dogs, mobility dogs, seizure alert dogs. These are dogs that have jobs that specifically are geared to support the lives of people with disabilities. Those animals are protected by the American Disability Act. Therefore, their ability to go into any environment with that person is fine because it's covered under the law.
As it should be.
Correct.
If they really do what they say the owners, you know, and which we'll get to.
Correct.
Okay, so what is a comfort dog?
Okay, so the two dogs, the two categories of working therapeutic animals, one are therapy animals. And therapy animals, again, provide services for others. In some cases, some people look at them as comfort dogs. You see them at airports helping. You see them in hospitals, schools. I personally have therapy animals in my own practice. These are dogs that should be registered, basically have meet standards of good obedience training, are affiliative in nature, meaning they want to be with people. And they're really consistent in their behaviors.
And hopefully certified to go into a facility.
Correct.
By organizations like Pet Partners.
Correct.
Yeah.
The interesting part, as we'll continue on, registered therapy animals are not covered by any laws. So in reality, when I take a therapy animal into a school, into a hospital, they allow the access because they recognize or appreciate the therapeutic value of animals, but they're not protected by under any laws. So the other working therapeutic animals that we could talk about are a group of animals called emotional support animals. And in some ways, I think the term emotional support animals really stem from some of the early research that shows that animals in our lives can provide a level of support from stress, from anxiety. So there have been individuals that basically say they need animals in their lives, their specific animal, who may or may not be as well-trained as a level of support for them. These animals are qualified and are under two very specific laws. One is the Fair Housing Act, which basically allows a person access to their home if, in fact, they have a letter of verification that says that that animal is an emotional support animal. And there's the air carrier law that basically the air carrier law suggests that they can bring the animal on the plane. And it's specifically a dog that we're really talking about because it provides that level of emotional support. But as you had just alluded, the real challenge is the fraudulent use of this category, and for that matter, people fraudulently saying that their animal is a service animal, and he or she may not be. And unfortunately, the fraudulent use of these terms has caused the public to be very, very judgmental on this. And I think what we need to clarify are better guidelines that allow people that need emotional support animals legitimately and service animals to get the credentialing that they need so that they can access these animals more freely. The part that we need to recognize is that the laws only protect emotional support animals in homes and on planes. Other places just are not under that jurisdiction.
All right, Dr. Aubrey Fine, thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Dr. Mike Lappin is a professor at the University of Colorado School of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences. Boy, that's a mouthful.
It really is, but it's also an excellent vet school, so we need a long title.
It is an excellent, extraordinary vet school. So one of the problems cats commonly have, just generically, upper respiratory viruses.
Oh, man, they do. It's, in fact, it's one of the big reasons that cats see vets and actually sometimes get euthanized because of the chronic recurrent respiratory disease. Lots of different viruses and bacteria are associated with that one.
It's this bucket that we call that, mm-hmm. but you could tease out some things, can't you?
Yeah, I think if we looked at the most common ones, if you'd look, and there have been many, many studies around the world, feline herpes virus, which is very closely related to human herpes simplex, the one that causes cold sores, that's by far the most common. And in fact, if you are living in a shelter or other crowded cat environments, by about day 28, hanging around with a bunch of other cats, 93% of cats will now be herpes infected.
Really?
Yeah, it's really amazing.
So is that true in people, by the way, that herpes virus is stress-related in people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cats and people both. And in fact, if you think about if you were stressed out studying for an exam or something, you might not have had a cold sore since you were a kid, and all of a sudden you get a small cold sore. So that definitely happens in the cat as well. Stress waking up causing illness, because herpes simplex and herpes in the cat usually don't cause any clinical signs, but if you get stressed it may wake up.
So what does help these cats?
Yeah, that's a great question, Steve. There are many different things, and thankfully now we know one of the human antivirals, the one called famciclovir. That one is very safe for cats, and if they're really, really sick, that would be the one the veterinarian would probably prescribe. But most of them aren't sick enough to require an antiviral drug. We can actually do some milder things like stress relief.
And does that matter? In fact, there's a study that you participated in recently that showed that, wow, it might matter.
Oh, boy, it's very clear. Just a stepwise group of studies, one that we did a couple of years ago, just moving cats that had upper respiratory infections, thought to be herpes, that were persisting longer than normal, weren't responding to antibiotics for the bacterial causes, just getting those cats into a less crowded room lessened stress, presumably, and let their respiratory infections actually kind of decrease their clinical signs back to being normal.
You mean a less crowded room at a shelter?
Yes, within the shelter itself, or if you can move them into foster. In fact, now I actually strongly support taking URI cats, the upper respiratory infection cats.
They're the first ones to go into foster homes.
Yeah, instead of keeping them in your medical unit where there's a lot more stress and a lot more animals, get them to a less crowded environment.
Now, there are some other things that can be done to reduce stress as well in cats.
Yeah, so, gosh, just a lot of stress associated diseases in cats. So having more litter boxes than you have cats, letting your cats get away from your dogs if you happen to have a shared environment like our house with four cats and four dogs. Our cats can escape into their cat house.
So something that does work to lower anxiety in a lot of different ways in cats is a analog of a pheromone.
Oh, yeah, the pheromone stuff is really fascinating. You know, the facial pheromones are the ones that we've studied that has been produced by SIVA and then marketed in several different types of markets. That particular pheromone we just showed in a stress model that we could lessen recurrent illness due to herpes by using this facial pheromone that led to more relaxation And so we presumably then less stress.
So every shelter should be spraying feel away everywhere. But aside from that, stress happens in homes. So you're adding another cat to the home. There are lots of things. Uncle Joe comes to visit for 2 weeks, and you've heard about Uncle Joe. It's not going to be easy. Yeah. So there are lots of things that happen all the time that stress us out, but also stress our cats out.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those things can't be blocked. You're going to still have to live your life. And that's why we chose to study their feel-away diffuser, which then allows this pheromone to be in the environment. Very safe, doesn't hurt people or pets, but does lead to that increased calmness or relaxation. And I believe this study that we'll publish this year is the first to show that by lessening stress in cats, we could actually lessen a physical disease, in this case herpes virus.
Which kind of makes common sense in a way if you think about it, because if you know herpes virus is either induced or exacerbated by stress in people and in cats, if you know that, reducing the stress then would make sense, but science is helpful to prove it.
Absolutely.
I'm a lucky guy. I've got a very good job. I get to talk to the leaders in veterinary medicine. You are certainly one of those. Dr. Mike Lappin, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve, for letting me be part of it.
So I was on the air here with Matt Bubala and also Bill and Wendy talking about the emergency response in Houston and how it compared to, say, Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita several years ago. And I will tell you, it's night and day. For a lot of reasons. The laws have changed. I mean, when all of us saw on television, which wouldn't and did not surprise me, how people responded during Hurricane Katrina, they would not leave their homes without their pets. No surprise to me. But America said, oh my gosh, we need to do something about this. And laws were changed. So now FEMA rescuers must, by law, actually take these animals if they can. Now, they always can't. I mean, there were instances, we also had on television, where the rescuers could only take, say, the wife and had to leave the husband at least for a while behind. You know, so you can do what you can do, but I will tell you, there was just an enormous difference in mindset. And all you have to do is watch the pictures, look at the images from the hurricane, both in Texas and Louisiana, and Hurricane Harvey, of course, and you see pets being rescued time and time again. Also, individuals did heroic things. They went out on their own to try to save animals. They would see an animal, a dog, say, in a river. It wasn't a river. It was really a street, but it looked like a river. And they'd swim out. I saw this, and they would grab the dog. This is Texas. Lots of horses needed rescuing. So the accounts of what people did for animals just is mind-blowing and warms my heart.